Blog Talk Radio.
Do you think they're really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they're ready for you? Nah.
I'm
really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Thinking, Chris, shrinking. Nah, I just don't brag about the deals I've been inking. Honorary degrees from Lincoln. I cross borders like no Sheikins and do albums in a weekend. I'm hip hop speaking, never the weakling. I'm the truth, man, so what are y'all speaking? Them lies and them liars, I still make flyers. I still ride bands and say MC for hire. I'll spit the fire anywhere, any place. Mama never told you to stay out of grown folk face. Then you got them rappers with that cold broke face. They toured around the world, then they going no place. My KRS One moves at his own pace. On vegetable oil, no gas, no waste. Then you got these intellectuals, really they're sexual, but they wanna remain respectable. Stop fronting.
Do you think
they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Thinking me, I say impeccable, running circles around these intellectuals. What a spectacle. They get mad when I say I and God are identical. You better get on your knees and praise them. These conspiracy theory rappers, I'll blaze them too. Ooh, deja vu. You seen this all before, me slaying your crew. I'm known by all the kids. I studied Dr. King, man, and all he did. People don't stop calling Chris for gigs, cause when I'm on the mic, man, I flip they lid. Me getting bullshit. I can't even count on the dough this month I did. From coast to coast, we roasting toast. I'm hot, me and the ice can't get close. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Revolutionaries know the game. We take away the pain like Novocaine. Knowledge reigning supreme, you know the name. This the name that don't play all them games. I ain't gonna call no names or take away no fame, but the airwaves is a shame, and the public don't know who to blame. So they blame rappers like we are insane, like we are to blame for society's pain, like they don't know for sure what's in our brains. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Same style oppression, socially rearranged. Many of our problems we already overcame, but we stuck in the past, can't see the change. Stuck in the Hyundai, can't see the range. Stuck in the towers, can't see the planes.
Bingo, 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 bingo.
Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah.
Okay, everybody, here's the business again. Technical difficulties one more time. It's the beginning of the year, and we're having a hard time getting everything uploaded and moving on. I mean, you heard Nod, You Got to Believe by Pointer Sisters and the Michael Jackson cut, but it seems like everything is running in a loop, a constant loop on our cycle. Maybe because it's the beginning of the year, they're trying to clean everybody up and add everybody on. But everything just be just coming in and off, like, I'll be just talking in the middle of things. And so,
why not believe in me?
ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Thinking, Chris, shrinking. Nah, I just don't brag about the deals I've been inking. Honorary degrees from Lincoln. I cross borders like no sheikins and do albums in a weekend. I'm hip hop speaking, never the weakling. I'm the truth, man, so what are y'all speaking? Them lies and them liars, I still make flyers. I still ride bands and say MC for hire. I'll spit the fire anywhere, any place. Mama never told you to stay out of grown folk face. Then you got them rappers with that cold broke face. They toured around the world, then they going no place. My KRS One moves at his own pace. On vegetable oil, no gas, no waste. Then you got these intellectuals, really they're sexual, but they wanna remain respectable. Stop fronting.
Do you think
they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Thinking me, I say impeccable. Running circles around these intellectuals. What a spectacle. They get mad when I say I and God are identical. You better get on your knees and praise them. These conspiracy theory rappers, I'll blaze them too. Ooh. Deja vu, you seen this all before me, slaying your crew. I'm known by all the kids. I studied Dr. King, man, and all he did. People don't stop calling Chris for gigs. Cause when I'm on the mic, man, I flip they lid. Me getting bullshit. I can't even count all the dough this month I did. From coast to coast, we roasting toast. I'm hot, me and the ice can't get close.
Do
you think they really ready for you? Nah. There'll be many of you, nah. Do you really think they ready for you, nah? Do you think they really ready for you, nah? Do you think that there'll be many of you, nah? Do you really think they ready for you, nah? Revolutionaries know the game. We take away the pain like Novocaine. Knowledge reigning supreme, you know the name. This the name that don't play all them games. I ain't gonna call no names or take away no fame. But the airwaves is a shame. And the public don't know who to blame. So they blame rappers like we are insane. Like we are to blame for society's pain. Like they don't know for sure what's in our brains. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Same style oppression, socially rearranged. Many of our problems we already overcame, but we stuck in the past, can't see the change. Stuck in the Hyundai, can't see the range. Stuck in the towers, can't see the planes.
Do
you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah.
Problems. We're trying to fix this right now, everybody. We are on the air. You've been holding on. I'm glad you've been holding on. Your line's been dropping. We've been having these little problems with the beginning of the year. I guess there's been a oversurge. I know our listenership's been up, and a lot of people on Blog Talk listenership also has been up. And I don't know if the traffic or the web system might be down or a solar flare might be messed with the satellite, but it seems as if I'm having just a little problem. So today's show, I was going to try to talk about Frederick Douglass, you know, continuing the life and career of this great orator, speaker, and abolitionist, please excuse me. and I thought I'll have something great for you. But it's like, seems like it's been difficult. I hope I'll have the same problem like this for Thursday, for my new music Thursday. Because I got a lot of music coming in, new music and stuff like that. It's going to be hard for me to even get that up. And from my mother's show I do on Saturdays. So we really trying to get everything done. I wish we was at our studio, and I could probably cross-reference and even go to our backup analog system. But when you're out in the field, you got to do Wi-Fi and catch all type of stuff. But anyway, what this show is going to be about is the life and times of Frederick Douglass, you know, the forgotten hero that people don't talk too much about. So I'm going to try to educate everybody on the great orator Frederick D., and we're going to just deal with that for the time being. So just bear with me, stay with me. 347-838-9825 is the number. Jimmy's Underground Radio Network. Here we go, everybody.
Day dawns. The morning star is bright upon the horizon. The iron gate of our prison stands half open. One gallant rush from the north will fling it wide open, while 4 millions of our brothers and sisters shall march out into liberty. Frederick Douglass, 1863.
In the Civil War between the North and South, Frederick Douglass was not a soldier, not a politician.
Yet he is a major figure in the coming of the Civil War and in the way the Civil War is fought. I think it's fair to say that in many ways he's the conscience of the nation in this instance, because he keeps before it this idea that this is a war not just to bring the nation back together, but it's a war to end this awful system, slavery, and it's a war to bring equality to black people, to make them part of American society.
I think he's sort of the image of a pillar of strength. If you had to pick someone, a tower of strength, just the strength emanates from him. And his hair, he's sometimes been characterized as the Lion of Anacostia.
People who described his speaking style and seeing and hearing him speak talk about the kind of power. He had a deep baritone, rich toned voice.
Frederick Douglass was certainly very striking as to his appearance. An aquiline nose, very piercing, wide-set eyes, a very strong chin, and he was a tall man, about 6 feet 2 inches, broad-shouldered, muscular, a man who, in fact, attempted to maintain himself in a strong and forceful appearance.
Douglass's life sort of stands across the expanse of the 19th century as a symbol of the worst and the best in the American character. He was the slave who saw most of the worst brutalities of slavery. He was the slave, however, who freed himself and by luck, pluck, and gifts remade himself. Most importantly, he had an enormous ability to capture in words the meaning of what America is about.
I have no accurate knowledge of my age, never having seen any authentic record containing it. By far the larger part of the slaves know as little of their ages as horses know of theirs, and it is the wish of most masters within my knowledge to keep their slaves thus ignorant. I do not remember to have ever met a slave who could tell of his birthday. Frederick Douglass, 1845.
It was along the eastern shore of Maryland, near a quiet creek called the Tuckahoe, that the life of the man who would inspire a nation began.
Frederick Douglass was born in Talbot County on Maryland's eastern shore. He wasn't certain of his birth himself. In fact, he thought that he had been born in 1817.
But slave records tell of the birth of Frederick Augustus to a slave named Harriet in February 1818.
He knew who his mother was, although she was a distant figure in his life. She lived on another plantation. He never really knew who his father was, although he came to believe that his father was definitely a white man and probably his master.
His master, Aaron Anthony, lived in the large white house that stood at the entrance to the plantation. It was part of a group of farms owned by a man known as Colonel Edward Lloyd.
Edward Lloyd's plantation was quite large, especially by Maryland standards. Maryland was an upper south state where generally you didn't have large numbers of slaves like the massive plantations that you might have expected in some areas of the deep south.
Raised by his grandmother at the far end of the plantation, the tiny boy named Frederick led a carefree, playful life along the muddy shores of the Tuckahoe until he was six.
At about age six, Douglas found that his childhood had come to an abrupt end. He was assigned to act as the companion and caretaker of the child of the owner of the plantation. And as a result, he could get in trouble for things that he either had done or had failed to do. And so it became immediately apparent that he was no longer a child but was a slave and was part of that institution of slavery.
Slavery's basic premise was that black people were inferior and were here to do the heavy work so that the superior whites could spend their time doing more important things. Slavery was an institution where one human being had absolute control over another human being. They might be here tomorrow, they might be sold the next day.
It was, in many ways, hopelessness condensed. They could not control where they went, what they did, what they ate, who they could marry, or even how they would conduct their religious lives. And so for many of these folks, it was truly just a step above the grave.
Into this inhuman system, slavery, young Frederick quickly came of age at the Lloyd plantation.
Shortly after arriving there, he witnessed the brutal beating of an aunt of his Aunt Hester. She had actually been beaten by Aaron Anthony, his owner, because she had disobeyed him. And so she was strung up and brutally lashed by him. And Douglas was witness to that.
Her arms were stretched up at their full length so that she stood upon the ends of her toes. He then said to her,
"I'll learn you how to disobey my orders."
And soon the warm red blood came dripping to the floor. Frederick Douglass, 1845.
It must have been terribly dehumanizing. On the one hand, Douglass and slaves like him were aware that there were free people of color and wondered certainly how that could be, why it was that there were some people who were free and some people who remained slaves, like he and his grandmother and his other relatives. And when you had free people in the midst of slaves in that way, it certainly did make the slaves long for freedom even more.
I've often been utterly astonished to hear persons who speak of the singing of a slave as evidence of his contentment and happiness. This is a terrible mistake. The songs of a slave represent the sorrows of his heart. Frederick Douglass.
Freedom. Young Frederick would discover his pathway to liberty after he was moved to the plantation owned by Hugh Auld, where he learned to read.
The fact that Frederick Douglass learned how to read at all is amazing, because in slavery, slaves were not supposed to learn how to read. It turned out that his mistress taught him how to read, despite the fact her own husband was not happy with the fact that she was doing that.
She treated him as if he were an adopted child. And one of the things she did was, I think she was having trouble learning to read herself, but she was struggling to learn to read the Bible, and she taught him to read the Bible. He then, in his childhood, tricked his white childhood acquaintances into sharing their homework and their books with him, which was not something that would be accepted officially, but between kids, nobody ever thought much about it.
From that moment, I understood the pathway from slavery to freedom. It was just what I wanted, and I got it at a time when I least expected it. Frederick Douglass, 1845.
At age 15, the slave Frederick Douglass was moved across the Chesapeake Bay to become a laborer. No longer isolated on a plantation, he would get a view of urban life in Baltimore. I've sat on Kenner's Wharf at the foot of Philpott Street in Baltimore, and I've seen men and women chained and put on a ship to go to New Orleans, and I still hear their cries. Frederick Douglass, 1845. In Baltimore, Douglass was hired on to a slave job in a shipyard, where he learned the skill and trade of a ship's caulker.
When Frederick Douglass got a job in the shipyard in Baltimore, he was still a slave, but he was an urban slave. That is, he was rented out to someone who then paid him for his work.
Allowed to keep a portion of his shipyard wages, Frederick eagerly saved to buy his first book.
The first book that Frederick Douglass read was The Columbian Orator. And it's not really accurate to say he read it. He memorized it. He practiced it. These were a collection of famous speeches. And as he read them, he'd read them over and over again, and then he would practice them. He would practice the tone of voice. He would practice the way he was to would deliver these speeches.
In Baltimore, Douglass finds a community of free blacks. He finds religious institutions. He finds friends and perhaps even mentors in the black community and a sense of social identity. And this will serve him well in later life.
It was at this time that Douglass would court a free black woman named Anna Murray.
Anna Murray was a pious, very quiet, very supportive African-American woman. It is quite obvious why Douglass was attracted to her. She gave him the support that he was looking for. She encouraged him in his efforts to acquire his freedom.
There were many schemes that slaves employed to acquire their freedom in the North. Henry Brown mailed himself to Philadelphia in a box. Still other slaves found freedom by becoming passengers on the Underground Railroad.
The Underground Railroad, despite the sound of the word, is not really a railroad that runs underground. What it was a series of places, houses, barns, sheds, tunnels, caves, just all sorts of places at strategic distances from slave territory into the North, where runaway slaves were hidden by a variety of people, black people and white people.
Harriet Tubman was the most famous and most wonderful of the operators on the Underground Railroad, a former slave who would have been very severely punished if she'd been caught.
Harriet Tubman was truly working on the front lines. Harriet Tubman took a direct and personal involvement in the efforts of achieving African-American freedom. She literally went back into slave territory and personally led slaves out on the Underground Railroad or through whatever means were possible in helping them to achieve their freedom.
Frederick Douglass would someday meet and admire Harriet Tubman, but not before he escaped on his own.
In 1838, Douglass devises a plan with Anna Murray to escape to the north. She sells a poster bed and gives him money to aid in the escape.
He has papers that will allow him to pass for a sailor, and sailors traveled regularly, and there were considerable numbers at that time of black sailors. So he's able to go by train to Wilmington, Delaware, still an area where he could be returned as a slave, and takes a steamboat for Philadelphia. In Pennsylvania, he is in a free state.
He continued to New York and was joined there by Anna Murray. They were married and resumed the journey north to New Bedford in Massachusetts. This whaling port held the bright promise of freedom for Douglass and his new bride.
When Douglass arrives in New Bedford, Massachusetts, one of the first things he attempts to do is find work. And he is, after all, a ship caulker. He had done that in Baltimore. New Bedford is a place where they build ships.
But even in Massachusetts, he finds that racism will rear its ugly head. And there are white laborers who will not work alongside of a black ship's caulker. And so even though he is trained and skilled in this particular endeavor, he has to take a job as a common laborer, cutting wood and doing other kinds of odd jobs in an attempt to make enough money to survive.
But finding work wasn't all that concerned Douglass in Massachusetts.
Douglass isn't safe in New Bedford for another important reason. He's still a slave. He's a runaway slave. He's a fugitive slave. And in the United States at that time, a fugitive slave, if found out, if captured, could be returned to slavery no matter how long he stayed in the place of his escape.
Within months of his arrival in New Bedford, Douglass learned of the abolition movement.
William Lloyd Garrison was perhaps the most prominent of the abolitionists of that period, and he was one of the group known as immediatists. These were abolitionists who wanted slavery to end immediately.
On the subject of slavery, I do not wish to think or speak or write with moderation. Tell a man whose house is on fire to give moderate alarm. Tell him to moderately rescue his wife from the hands of a ravisher. But urge me not to use moderation in a cause like the present. I will not retreat a single inch, and I will be heard. William Lloyd Garrison, 1831.
Douglass becomes interested in abolitionism. He becomes interested in the newspaper published by William Lloyd Garrison called The Liberator, and becomes aware of the network of abolitionists that exist throughout the northeastern states.
The Liberator became my meat and my drink. My soul was set all on fire. Its sympathy for my brethren in bonds, its faithful exposures of slavery, and its powerful attacks upon the institution sent a thrill of joy through my soul such as I had never felt before. Frederick Douglass, 1845. Grand anti-slavery convention was held in Nantucket under the auspices of Mr. Garrison and his friends. I had taken no holiday since establishing myself in New Bedford, and I determined on attending the meeting. Frederick Douglass.
The summer of 1841 saw Frederick Douglass steam away through the coastal waters of New Bedford. He called it his holiday, but as he crossed the water, he journeyed to a new beginning on the island of Nantucket.
Douglass will attend a meeting of the American Anti-Slavery Society, and Garrison speaks, Douglas is electrified. Garrison learns that an escaped slave is in the crowd and asks Douglas to stand up and say a few words.
Men and women are in a semicircle on the podium, and Douglas stands up at the lectern and begins his talk. And quietly, the voice begins, and he tells stories about having been a slave, what slave life was like. And for 2 hours, the audience will be just hanging on every word, just a huge crowd. And he will work that crowd like a preacher.
I stand before you this night as a thief and a robber. I stole this head, these limbs, this body from my master and ran off with them. I have seen this pious man cross and tie the hands of a young female slave and lash her on the bare skin and justify the deed with a quotation from the Bible.
Frederick Douglass becomes an overnight success in this arena of public speaking in the anti-slavery cause, not at the beginning because of his oratorical powers, but because here is the genuine article. Here is a man who was himself a slave.
The public have itching ears to hear a colored man speak, and particularly a slave. Multitudes will flock to hear one of his class speak. It would be good policy to employ a number of colored agents, if suitable ones can be found. John Collins, Massachusetts Anti-Slavery Society, 1842.
Garrison, too, was impressed with Douglas and determined that Douglas could be of enormous help to the anti-slavery cause. And so fairly soon thereafter, Douglas is recruited to go about the country and lecture on behalf of the anti-slavery society.
By 1843, Douglas had embarked with Garrison on the 100 Conventions Project, a six-month tour of anti-slavery meetings in New England, Ohio, Illinois, and Indiana. As an abolitionist speaker, Douglas was regularly singled out for attack by pro-slavery supporters. Still, the great speaker would evolve into a persuasive writer.
Douglas publishes his first biography, Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass, in 1845. In that autobiography, he does give details. He gives information about his owners. He talks about the area from which he had escaped. And he does so at great risk to himself. He knows that now the owner does know where he is and certainly could send a slave catcher to get him.
In order to protect himself, in fact, he goes to England. And he stays in England for almost 2 years because he indeed believes, and others believe, that he will be taken back into slavery.
While in England, friends of his collect money for his purchase, and they make arrangements with his owner to have him sold to them, of course, and Douglas gets his freedom that way.
In 1847, Douglas returned to the United States, not as a fugitive slave, but as a free man.
On his return from England, Frederick Douglass moves to Rochester, New York, and begins to publish a newspaper, the North Star.
The symbolism, of course, of the North Star was what the slave escaping to freedom followed as he fled northward toward what he hoped would be a better life. And Douglass wanted his newspaper to be part of that process toward a better life for all black people.
It's also at this very time in the late 1840s and early 1850s that Douglass was really experiencing a kind of political awakening as well. He was beginning to learn the art of politics, even though like all black leaders before the Civil War, he would never have elective sanction.
In July of 1852, the people of Rochester invited Douglass to address their Independence Day festivities. For Douglass, this was not a day to celebrate.
The character and conduct of this nation never looked blacker to me than on this 4th of July. To drag a man in fetters into the grand illuminated temple of liberty and call upon him to join you in joyous anthems are inhuman mockery. My subject, fellow citizens, is American slavery. This 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice. I must mourn. Frederick Douglass, 1852.
The 1850s saw Frederick Douglass continue a comfortable home life in Rochester, New York. He and Anna would raise five children here, among them Charles and Rosetta. With their help, he would continue his newspaper, now called Frederick Douglass's Paper. It was also in Rochester that he would meet a man called Brown.
John Brown was an abolitionist who was absolutely dedicated to the overthrow of the institution of slavery.
John Brown said that slavery could be purged only by blood. It could be overthrown only by force. And by the middle 1850s, Douglass was open to this message.
John Brown and Douglass established a very close relationship because John Brown shared the mission that Douglass did. John Brown was a white man who felt that it was immoral to hold slaves and was determined that he would do whatever was necessary to free them and, if necessary, lead the slaves in insurrection.
John Brown had indeed planned such a revolt at a place called Harper's Ferry in Virginia.
When Brown begins to develop his plan for the attack on Harper's Ferry, he wants Frederick Douglass to participate in it. Douglass thinks about it for some time, but he decides this is not for him. He decides not to do it.
As a result of the raid, John Brown and his men were hung for treason. To Douglass, Brown had become a powerful symbol for the violent overthrow of the slave system.
Posterity will owe everlasting thanks to John Brown. Slavery is a system of brute force. It must be met with its own weapons. John Brown has initiated a new mode of carrying on the crusade of freedom. Frederick Douglass, 1859.
By 1860, the sectional dispute symbolized by men like John Brown had reached grand proportions, and the Republican, Abraham Lincoln, would run for president of a divided nation.
Now, Abraham Lincoln, as the presidential candidate, has made some pretty non-committal kinds of remarks regarding slavery. But at the same time, the subtext is clearly to at least restrain slavery to the areas where it exists now, and perhaps if you squinted a little, you could see Lincoln looking down the road toward perhaps reducing the power of slavery.
If he's elected president, the South is in dire difficulty. So as a result of Lincoln's election, the South decides to take the fatal move to secede from the Union because they're sure that down the road, slavery is in dire peril.
On April 12, 1861, Confederate troops bombarded Fort Sumter, a federal installation in the harbor of Charleston, South Carolina.
When the first rebel cannon shattered the walls of Sumter and drove away its starving garrison, I predicted that the war then and there would not be fought entirely by white men. The chance is now given you to end in a day the bondage of centuries and to rise in one bound from social degradation to the place of common equality with all other varieties of men. Frederick Douglass.
Well, once the Civil War came, to Frederick Douglass it was unmistakable. This war had been caused by slavery, and its purpose ought to be the abolition of slavery. He saw Fort Sumter and the outbreak of war as more than reason for the federal government to commit itself to a war against slavery. At least that's what he most fondly hoped.
Douglass is glad to see the war come. He knows that it means the freedom of millions of slaves in the South and a changed way of life for thousands of free blacks in the North. Douglass argues, lectures, writes, proposes constantly that there should be a Negro army. These comments fall on deaf ears. The War Department has no interest in recruiting black soldiers.
By refusing to let blacks fight in the Union armies, the North was depriving itself of thousands of willing and able soldiers. And the casualties that the Northern armies faced on the battlefield would become alarming. September 17, 1862, saw the worst day of fighting to date, as the U.S. Army of the Potomac and the Confederate Army of Northern Virginia faced off along Antietam Creek in Sharpsburg, Maryland. The Union lost 12,000 soldiers.
In 1862, after the Battle of Antietam, it is clear that this is going to be a long and bloody and difficult war. Lincoln uses Antietam as an opportunity to announce his upcoming Emancipation Proclamation.
Whereas, on the 22nd day of September, A.D. 1862, all persons held as slaves within any state or designated part of a state shall be then, thenceforward, and forever free. And the executive government of the United States, including the military and naval authority thereof, will recognize and maintain the freedom of such persons. President Abraham Lincoln, 1862.
One of the provisions in the Emancipation Proclamation was that African Americans could be enlisted to help win this war in any way that the administration thought they could be useful, including as soldiers.
Douglass is, of course, wildly enthusiastic about this. And in 1863, Douglass is approached by George L. Stearns, a Massachusetts philanthropist and businessman who has been appointed to recruit a regiment of African-American soldiers for the Civil War, and Douglass becomes one of his recruiting officers.
I hereby authorize Frederick Douglass to go to Washington, D.C. as my agent to transact business connected with the recruiting service for United States Colored Volunteers. Major George L. Stearns, August 1863.
Douglass meets with Lincoln at the White House in August of 1863, and they had an immensely respectful meeting. And frankly, Douglass came away from that, as he once said in simple terms, "I felt big there." Douglass came away with a certain respect for Lincoln's intentions, if not a total respect for his policies.
In churches and meeting halls across the North, Douglass spoke to crowds of young black men, convincing them to put on the uniform of the Union.
From east to west, from north to south, the sky is written all over, now or never. I urge you to fly to arms and smite with death the power that would bury the government and your liberty in the same hopeless grave. He who would be free themselves must strike the blow. Frederick Douglass, March 2nd, 1863.
He goes out and heavily recruits blacks for particularly the 54th Massachusetts, an all-black unit with white officers.
Two of Douglass's first recruits to the 54th Massachusetts were his sons, Charles Remond Douglass and Lewis Douglass, who would become Sergeant Major.
One of the outstanding examples of black soldiers fighting in the Civil War was the 54th Massachusetts leading of the assault on Fort Wagner, one of the outposts defending Charleston Harbor in July of 1863. Robert Gould Shaw, who was the white Massachusetts colonel of the 54th Massachusetts Regiment, had been pleading for an opportunity to prove that his men would fight, to prove their courage. And he got his wish when the commander assigned the 54th to lead the attack. They did so. They fought heroically. They suffered almost 50% casualties, including Colonel Shaw.
This regiment has established its reputation as a fighting regiment. Not a man flinched, though it was a trying time. I've been in two fights and am unhurt. The last was desperate, and we charged that terrible battery on Morris Island, known as Fort Wagner. Men fell all around me. How I got out of that fight alive, I cannot tell. Sergeant Lewis Douglas, 1863.
Douglas's role in the Civil War, in the victory in the Civil War, is important. The very fact that by the end of the war, some 200,000 black soldiers and sailors participated in the war, about a tenth of the entire Union force during this war, is very, very important. One could argue that they were pivotal as the war was coming to an end.
I end where I begin. No war but an abolition war. No peace but an abolition peace. Liberty for all. Chains for none. Frederick Douglass, 1864.
We'll make the rebels stand. We'll stand by the Union if we only have a chance.
Standing in solitary grace in the hills above Washington, D.C., stands a stately home called Cedar Hill. It was here, far from the plantation where he was born in slavery, that Frederick Douglass would spend his final years.
What's interesting about the house is that it's a large house, 14 rooms. It has a white columned porch, and it is an estate looking out over the Anacostia River at the Capitol. It is very reminiscent of the houses lived in by slave owners years before. And so Douglass has his sort of ironic place in the sun in a setting that is very much representative of a Victorian gentleman.
By the end of the war, Douglass is seen as a leader of black America. He's a fairly wealthy man. He is able to purchase a fine home, but he's still not satisfied. Douglass, to the end of his life, was looking for greater things. He wanted some governmental appointment, and eventually he did acquire those. He was made Marshal of the District of Columbia.
He spoke at anniversary after anniversary, at GAR reunion after GAR reunion, down to the 1890s, where he tried to forge a kind of black abolitionist memory of the Civil War, increasingly losing that struggle against the sentimentalized, romanticized, lost cause conception of the meaning and memory of the Civil War. But to his dying day, Douglass insisted that what this war had been about was not just a fight between men of valor, but a struggle to establish, as he once said, a nation that could live up to its creeds.
The winter of 1882 saw Douglass publish his last autobiography. In the summer, he watched as Anna, his wife, passed away.
He grieved terribly. He really seems almost to have had a nervous breakdown in that following summer. But he pulled himself together, largely through being involved in reform things. And one of the movements that he was very committed to was equal rights for women.
Douglass never retired from public view in Washington. His lecture fee was now $150 plus expenses, and he remained in constant demand.
About 17 months or so after the death of his first wife, to whom he'd been married for 44 years, Douglas decides to again take up matrimony. He marries a woman that he has had working in his office. Helen Pitts was nearly 20 years younger than Frederick Douglass and was white. When Douglass married her in 1884, this caused a tremendous sensation in the United States.
One of the things that Douglass encountered in that new relationship was a realization that despite being the great Frederick Douglass, he was still another black man stepping across the bounds of American society's mores. If Douglass thought that he had overcome, or that America had overcome its own prejudices, his second marriage, if nothing else, brought that reality closer home to Douglass.
It could be certain, however, that well into his 71st year, Frederick Douglass would not be stopped by bigotry.
Late in his life, President Benjamin Harrison, a Republican, recognized Douglass in an interesting way and made him minister to Haiti, the Black Republic.
Putting him out there as a representative of America, I think in many ways was a crowning part of his career.
It was a career that in many ways was a miracle. Born a slave, he stood in his closing days as a statesman. On February 20th, 1895, Frederick Douglass suffered a stroke at his home on Cedar Hill and was dead at the age of 78.
What happens next is a solemn and somber awareness of Douglass's passing throughout the United States. African Americans throughout the country hear, as soon as the telegraph and the railroads and other means can allow it to be known.
If Frederick Douglass's great voice had been silenced, it had, before he died, been heard.
Slavery is a doomed system.
Slavery was over. But more than that, he had insisted always that African Americans must have full equality. He never wavered from that.
To those who have suffered in slavery, I can say I too have suffered. To those who have battled for liberty, brotherhood, and citizenship, I can say I too have battled. Frederick Douglass.
Jimmy Lee's Underground Radio Network. Let me bring these live callers in. Gung Ho Fo Choi, Dana. How you doing?
The J,
happy
the
New
I,
Year.
The Y. Oh, hey, Jimmy.
What's going on, Dana?
Jimmy, how are you?
I can't complain. We're doing our little celebrational tribute to Frederick Douglass, a great abolitionist who helped orchestrate the freedom of slaves in the 1865 era during the Emancipation Proclamation, one of the unsung heroes of the Civil War era. And I think he should be acknowledged in his 150th year of the anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation.
I'm definitely enjoying the history lesson.
Yeah. But anyway, do you have any comment on the extra that I played for you? Talk to me Tuesday, so we go off what you want to talk about. But you want to comment on the little extra that I played, you can. 347-838-9825.
I found it interesting that after all he did, that the reality of the time came back and it really hit home at the fact that despite all of his successes, at the end he was still faced with the same problems that were found throughout society.
Well, you see, Dana, he was a hated man. I mean, how dare this man have the audacity to run away from slavery, teach himself how to read, then write a book about how it was to be a slave, how he ran away from slavery, who his master was, and all the atrocities that his masters did, to the point that the book outraged Americans, that they said if they find him again, he's going to go back to the plantation and pick cotton till he died. And that's why he broke camp and went to England. And all the citizens of England gathered all their coins up to pay his freedom. So he left America a slave, and came back a free man. He could have stayed in England, Ireland. He was a celebrity. That book, the autobiography from Frederick Douglass, was worldwide. But he couldn't be in England while everybody's suffering over here. You know, towards the end of his life, like the tape said, just by being an ambassador to Haiti was something honored to him. You see, let's look at America at this time. We just won a civil war. We just got out. African Americans, that is, or descendants of slaves, you know, the descendants of enslaved citizens. Is that better, Ebony? Okay, enslavement. And the citizens of enslavement, citizens. Here we have a black man going to Haiti representing America. That's almost equivalent to Barack Obama becoming president, going overseas, representing America. Well, break it down. It's something like Colin Powell being Secretary of State, going all around the world, being the face of America. And that's what he was. At this trying time, when racism was at all-time high. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's outstanding. The sad thing is that what year was that?
18. What year was that? It had to be like 18. When we became ambassador, we were 1880-something when he was an ambassador. And a Republican president, and I love saying that, and a Republican president sent them down there. Harrison, I think his name was. I don't want to incorrectly give the right and the wrong name, but I think it was Harrison. We run the tape back again. Harrison sent him as an ambassador to Haiti. Now, people fail to realize that Toussaint overthrew the British people over there in Haiti, and they just got their independence. So Haiti at this time is a black colony, and to see a black man coming from America, representing America, was something profound at that time, you know. So he does not get all the respects that he should get as being a great African American or American, you know. So, shout out to him, you know, and Christmas Addicts, you know.
And the part about that is the fact that here that's over 100 something years ago, and we're still struggling with acceptance of cultures in this same country right now to this day.
It's not on the cultural aspect of the game. It's on. What's it? Well, chime in. What's it, Ebony?
Proper name of the book is Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass, an American Slave.
Oh, that was the excerpt that we played. Okay, thank you, Ebony. What I was saying was that during that time. And now, the same struggles that we had then, we're having now. If you look at the definition of slavery back then, you can say black folks still are in slavery now. You know, being dependent on the government, i.e. like being dependent on master. You know, you got to have insurance because each slave was insured. Like our Lehman Brothers got paid. You had to that's the Lehman Brothers, J.P. Morgan. They insured Slade. I mean, listen, if you really want to track down reparations and who owned what, where, when, why, you go to Lehman Brothers right now and get the records. Because every slave in America was insured once or twice. Because a man wanted money if his property got destroyed, lost, damaged, or ill. You know,
you can't use that. There's no way to associate the two.
Mm-mm. Explain yourself.
Because, okay, so honestly, let's look at what a definition of a slave is, or what, in my opinion, a definition of a slave is, okay? Because you can have people that are enslaved by system, right?
But slavery was a system. It was not a travesty. It was a system. Wall Street was built off slaves. The reason why it's called Wall Street was because they built the wall up so you wouldn't see the auction of slaves, the property going back and forth. We were a system.
But the country was built by slaves.
But no. The country was built by free labor of individuals enslaved in an unjust system that enslaved darker colored men and women and children and forced them to do work for sometimes pay, but almost no pay because it was property. So the system.
There were people that were bought and sold. See, the problem with the enslavement in America, because you have people that will say, well, you know, there were slaves back in Africa. There were slaves back a long time ago. Black people were selling slaves. There's a difference. The biggest difference is that in other countries where people tried to work off fees or work off debt, then, yes, you may have had to allow your son to go and work for whomever to pay for whatever. And then when that debt was paid, then your son came back to your family. The difference is that the slavery that happened in America, there was no debt to repay and there was no payoff. So people were enslaved for their entire lives. And they were slaves based on the color of their skin. And so because they couldn't take their skin off, that debt could never be repaid. And besides that, there was no monetary value associated with why they were working. They were just working to be working because they were held hostage by a system of corrupt people that had been established and built on racism.
Right. But let me go here, Dana, and say this. When the Emancipation Proclamation was signed, the descendants of enslaved people had nowhere to go.
Why?
Had nothing to do. Why, Dana? Because they depended on one person to feed them, clothe them, house them, provide them with health care, because you had your slaves had to be healthy to pick the cotton. You couldn't make money off a sick slave. You couldn't make money off a sick slave. You see, people always think that. People think
that
slaves. Dana, when you think about slavery, you always think about people hung up on poles getting whipped and beat. Master didn't whip all and beat slaves because he lost money and he couldn't even get a resale value when he tried to sell the man or resell it. You see, we was property. Right now,
that takes me to my next point, because then there's also the enslaved mind.
Well, no, Dana. If a slave mind person decides to run away from a plantation when slavery was legal. He was in the jail, hung, went back to his master, and got whipped or maimed.
But see, the enslaved mind.
That's not mental. That's not mental. That was the law. We have laws on books. See, no. Mentality is something that someone holds on you. That's in, with invisible chains. But when laws are on books, preventing you from reading, breeding, marrying, working, living, existing, laughing. When those laws on the books prevent you to be a human, that's not mental.
No. The enslaved mind wasn't the person who decided to run away and fight for their freedom. The enslaved mind was the one that was getting the few privileges. And so because they received a few privileges, then they needed to help keep those slaves in place.
Well, Dana, that's like it is right now. Right now, Dana, we have about 38 black congressmen right now in D.C. Conditions of African Americans here in America are worse off now than they were when Frederick Douglass went over to Haiti.
That's not true. That's bull.
Oh, is it bull?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
That's bull. How could you even say that?
Explain why it's bull, Dana.
I mean, the fact that, we'll just use the mere fact that people had to gather their coins to buy his freedom.
I said, Dana, Haiti. By the time he was in Haiti, the Emancipation Proclamation was signed. When it went to two presidents.
The signing of the Emancipation Proclamation didn't strike down all the horrific acts that led to the needing of the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation.
You know how many senators we had after signing the Emancipation Proclamation? Dana, do you know how many senators and governors we had after the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation? Do you know?
It doesn't matter. Exactly,
you don't know, Dana. See, you're right. It doesn't matter that we had black leadership then and
not
now. I guess you're right, Dana. Dana, you're right. We don't have black leadership now.
I'm saying that you can't take a society that has, you can't just base one aspect on whether or not we're doing well.
Why can't I?
Just because we got senators and governors and congressmen in office.
Okay.
And the president, that does not mean that we're doing well as a country. We're still fighting to stop racist practices. You can't base 150 years now.
We're still fighting racist practices, right?
Absolutely.
Just like I said, Dana, if we're still fighting practices 150 years now, damn straight, we had it better when Frederick Douglass went to Haiti in 1885.
No, it doesn't mean that we've had it better.
We had senators from South Carolina, senators from North Carolina, senators from Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama. We had governors of states. Once upon a time, you had people picking cotton. Now they're making laws for the whole state. What I'm telling you right now,
and
we have power. We have so much power.
No, Dana.
We have so much power. And as a people, Dana.
It shouldn't be something exciting. The problem is the excitement because we don't get the opportunity.
Why do you think there's
so much uproar about having an African-American president for the first time? Because it never happened, even though we've been voting for how many decades?
What does that
how
mean?
How many decades have we been voting, and how long have we been here?
Well, Jesse Jackson ran, Al Sharpton ran, Carol Moseley Braun ran, Shirley Chisholm ran.
How many were elected?
Dana, the fact that we had the opportunity to run.
We should
how
have
about
the
this?
Opportunity.
Do you know that Frederick Douglass even ran for president, Dana? With
and
a white
should.
Woman for vice
he
president,
is an American
Dana?
Citizen.
No. What I'm saying is, hold on. The point I'm saying is that if we're given the opportunity, then we have the opportunity. All we want is the opportunity. If we don't get the opportunity, then we're denied the opportunity. But we get the opportunity, you're supposed to make best of the opportunity that's given to you. Period. Okay, Dana. Trivia question. How many black senators do we have in the United States Senate?
I have no idea.
One. Did you know that? Right. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, Dana.
And that just goes.
You know his name, Dana? Of course you don't know his name, Dana. And you're an educated person. Now, do me a favor. Why don't you ask 10 of your black friends that don't listen to the show who Tim Scott is? If they can't say the black senator from South Carolina, who happens to be a Republican, they can't say that. Then the point I'm saying is that we don't pay attention when we gain progress, or even when we gain progress, we have to shit on the progress that we made. Because this man's a Republican, and not one black American knows that we have a black senator in the Senate.
Jimmy, how many black senators have we had?
Okay. Since when? Since Reconstruction?
The last 20 years.
Okay, we had Edward Brooks, black senator from Massachusetts.
One.
Then we had Carol Moseley Braun, Barack Obama, and Tim Scott.
Three.
We had two Republicans and two Democrats.
Did you name a person?
Roland Burris. We had Roland Burris.
Okay, four.
Listen, three senators from Illinois and the rest are from, except Massachusetts, the rest are from the South.
Okay, so we've had four out of how many senators? Out of how many senators? How long is the Senate's term? The senator's term?
6 years.
6 years.
Yeah.
So we looked at a 20-year time frame, and we can't even fill up one hand. 20 years.
Well, Dana.
So out of 6 years,
Let's do recent history, can we? Let's go 3 years ago.
Wait a minute now.
How many senators first day, Jimmy? What point are you trying to make?
I'm just trying to be educated here. I'm trying to gain some knowledge.
What do you
want to
know?
I just want you to help me break it down. How many senators per state?
It's two.
Okay, and how many states is there?
There's 100 senators in the United States Senate, Dana.
So we're talking 100 senators times 6 years. So there was a potential for 600 people. And we
got to four.
I'm sorry. I take it back. We did a 20-year time frame, right?
Okay, Dana.
So we're looking at 600 people, and we get to count to four. There
okay,
is
Dana.
A disparity there.
You put them up, Anthony. Black senators. Okay, we're going to go before Reconstruction, Dana. We're going to go after Reconstruction, and then we'll go after the Voting Rights Act. We're going to go like that, Dana. And we're going to go why I said, Dana, I'm going to educate you, Dana. Okay, go on there.
It's like a Snickers bar. No matter how you slice it, you still come up peanut.
Okay. Great. Now, let me get right here, Dana. And the point I'm trying to make is that we have a black senator from South Carolina.
Yes. Thank
and you didn't know. And you didn't know. And you didn't know, Dana. Hold
on
for a second.
Of course not, because he's number four.
Hold on. Hold on. Okay. Good. Now, the last black senator prior to Tim Scott was Roland Burris. Now,
and when was
Roland
that?
Burris, that was like 5 years ago, 4 years ago? Three, four years ago? Hold on, 2010?
Are you 2010? Out of more than 600 people, this number four.
What'd
the
you say,
only
Dana?
One is more than, you're looking at more than 600 people that
Dana,
have potential for more than
Dana,
600.
Let me make my point, Dana, because you're just throwing stuff out there. Let me make my point. In 2009, Rob Blagojevich appointed Roland Burris. Harry Reid in the Senate specifically told Robert Gorbachev, don't send us no black senators. We don't want no blacks up here. So he sent them Roland Burris. Do you forget that they didn't even seat Roland Burris? They didn't want him seated. He had to be outside the White House, Dana, in the rain, trying to get seated. He's a black guy from, a Democrat guy from Chicago, Illinois. Here go the Democrat Senate, senators, saying we don't want this guy. Now, the point I'm trying to say is this, Dana, while I'm Republican, is that when black Republicans, and we do run for senator in many states.
But are we
sometimes, hold on, Dana. And sometimes we get the nomination. But when we go up against a white Democrat, the blacks in the state will vote for the white Democrat. Why, Dana? Because they don't understand power. Now, I just told you that we have a black senator. Now, let him be a Democrat. You hear so much news about it. Big celebration. Pomp and circumstance. But why you don't hear nothing? Because the media know, just like I know, that once word get out that blacks are moving up in the Republican Party, more African Americans will be going Republican. Now, the guy takes office next week. Because ain't nobody talking about it. Why? You see, let me go, it's like this, Dana. We celebrate all the women senators in the Senate. We celebrate all the Hispanics that's in the Senate. We celebrate all the Asians that's in the Senate. But we don't even mention the one black senator we got. We only got one. Hispanics got about five or six. Asians got about five or six. Two. They got them two or three. I don't know how many women up there. About how many women up there? 30?
Well, I don't
what
know.
What I'm saying is that in America, everybody is represented in the Senate but African Americans. And we do get our one senator. Damn right he should be celebrated. Damn right he should be recognized. And damn right he should be watched.
I think any time in this United States, if we are still looking at numbers of one of
like how many women get a job with Dana, like how many what's the disparity between men and women in the workplace, Dana? So don't throw that out there, because if you're gonna go on race, it's going on gender also, and throw it all out the board.
What I'm saying is that any time, if we are counting one of anything in this country that is comprised of so many, then that in itself says that there's a problem. because when you come from, live in, work in, and represent a melting pot, then that melting pot, then the example of the melting pot should be seen in elected officials. You see? And so anytime we're saying one of, look, we got this one, the first time, and we've been doing this hundreds of times and multiples of decades, that says that there is a problem. You see, because we shouldn't be celebrating the race of anything because they got elected. We should be celebrating what the person is, what the person stands for, and what they're going to do for us. You see what I'm saying? When I look at the person, when I look at somebody who is representing me as a constituent, I want to know that their goals and their values and their lifestyle is one that's going to be worthy of praise, not the color of their skin.
Okay, Dana. Hi, I'm Rivels, Republican from Mississippi, Senator 1870-1871. Blanche Bruce, Mississippi, 1875-1881. This is Dana. I'm trying to tell you about how good we were before Reconstruction. Ed Brooks, 67-79. Hey, Dana, you was born Ed Brooks around. Do you know Ed Brooks, Dana? 67-79, Dana. He's a senator from Massachusetts. Do you know anything about him, Dana? No.
But he's number three, Jimmy.
Dana.
He's number three. How long have we been voting?
Yeah. Do you know about the Brook Amendment, Dana? You know about Title 19, Dana?
How long have we been voting?
Dana. Well, I'm telling you this, Dana. See, there are black senators that did so much for Americans that made laws that you right now and that all Americans benefit off of that just get swept away in history. I'm going to go again. The Brook Amendment that makes affordable housing for those people who get judged the money so they can live in affordable housing. Title 19 so girls can go play basketball. The law to make women not to be able to have their own separate tax form from their husbands. I mean, there's so many laws up and down, so you can't discriminate against housing, against black Americans of color. I mean, these are laws that black senators put down, and not just for black Americans.
But see, they put them all down, Jimmy, because of the problem. The law didn't create the problem. The problem created the law.
And wait up, the law created a problem, Dana. Don't try to apples and oranges, watermelons and carrots. Do you remember Ed Brooks?
Yes, I remember Ed Brooks.
Not the guy that, not because he slept with Bob Walters, right? Not because of that, right? Right, Dana. Okay. Right, okay. I said,
well,
people don't remember Roland Burris. And we just had him, we had him between 2009 and 2010. Do forget about Carol Mosley Braun easily, the first black woman senator, You see, how soon we forget? Easy to forget. You see, why we celebrate one? Because we want to clap two. And if we got one
because there is such an inequity that there's only little sprinkles of one.
Oh, the only little
sprinkles
of one.
Carol Mosley Braun. We'll use her as an example. When Carol Mosley Braun,
why do you think there are only
was successful, then she should have paved the way for others.
Oh, Dana, she has. Again, there are about 30-something women senators in the Senate. She paved the way. So what are you talking about? The glass that has been broken. See, when you deal with black women, you just deal with all women. You don't put them with just blacks. These are women. They're women in a different category.
Now, well, I agree because you got to figure in this society, what? You got a 50-50 chance of being a woman. And we
I'm not
going to
put the black
male people here.
Category. She can easily jump in the woman category, and that's how come you can probably forget that she was in the Senate. But let me go into black men. When you get to the Senate, that's a position of high power and authority. Now, black people just got to be able to trust black people to sit in those seats of authority, Dana. you know, point blank. Let me give you an example. Let me give you a good example. There's a good friend of mine. His name is I don't call his name. I just say Garcia. That's his last name, Garcia.
Okay.
And Garcia is a high-ranking state official here, the State Central Committee here in Chicago. He ran a couple of times. He's big in the Young Republican Party here, big in a couple of PACs. Big Republican. On his webpage, my man Angel Garcia, my man Angel Garcia on his webpage got how proud is the Republican in that he works hand in hand with Luis Gutierrez, who's a Democrat, for the Dream Act. You see, together, not based on party, but based on power. Blacks get together and always want to say, all the Republicans this, the Republicans that. If I'm a Democrat, man, you got to be crazy. I ain't messing with Republicans, man. No. And if it's a black Republican, you got to be a sellout because I've been trained that way, like you said, Dana, earlier.
I never said that.
Mental slavery. The point of the matter, you can't take your chains off your mind and remove the R and see the black face. You don't see the black face. You see the R.
I disagree. Jimmy.
Let me give you an example. Dana, I'm going to give you an example how you see the R and not the black face. How you see it. What's your opinion of Clarence Thomas? Hello?
Yeah, Clarence Thomas?
Yeah, what's your opinion of Clarence Thomas?
I don't have an opinion of Clarence Thomas.
Why not?
No reason. Why would I have an opinion of him? I don't have no reason to have an opinion for him or against him.
Hey, you should have an opinion of Clarence Thomas because he is the most powerful black man in America. He sits on the Supreme Court. He makes the laws that everybody in America governs by. If he say I don't like it, it don't go. If he say I like it, it go. Barack Obama got to go to him to get what he want done. Just like George or any other president that had.
But why would that make me have an opinion of him, though?
Because what I'm saying is this. Not even knowing how powerful this black man was or is, you should have some type of opinion of a black person in power, especially of the job that he's been doing in court justice. If we sit here on my show and argue about, let me give you an example how he's so important. We sit here on our show and we go back and back about the rights of homosexuals all day long. And guess where that's going to end up at? Guess who's going to end up judging that case? Clarence Thomas. And it's said and done. Ain't going to what Barack Obama say. He ain't got to sign it all day. In the end, is that man back there in that black robe going to just say, well, I feel it can go or no? See, that's power. And now, by you not having an opinion of him because he's so passe, he's got to be opinionated of.
Why wouldn't we look at the whole as opposed to the parts?
Because when your car ain't running right, you got to check the parts and see what's wrong with the hole. Because in order for the hole to be...
But you can't just strap a window. You got to have a seat. You got to have a seat belt. You got to have an engine.
And those are all parts. And that's why we deal with the parts instead of
the
hole.
They contribute to the hole.
Dana,
all those parts make up the hole.
You're a Navy. You're on a ship. You got to have it. Before y'all even sell off, you go through a whole checklist. Check every goddamn thing. Before this whole ship moves, run every part, check every goddamn thing. Check. Before anything can move. So the sum of the whole has got to be determined by the parts, because all parts make the whole. Just like
right.
What? One, listen, it's funny. that 1/4 of a circle is a square. That means 1/4 of a round object is number 4 corners. I'm just saying that's a part. Then high tech, just illusional, allegory speaking. But the point I'm saying is you got to deal with the parts to get to the sum of the whole. Instead of having A plus...
I'm not saying don't deal with the parts. I'm saying that...
A plus B got to be C.
I'm saying that when you are in a position where you say, oh, look at the one bolt. Look at the one bolt. Look at the one bolt. Then that says that there's a problem with the car. Because if I'm trying to show you and trying to sell you a light bulb, we got an entire vehicle. And especially when we're talking about the things that we're talking about, we got an entire car lot. And I'm saying, oh, look at this one light bulb. That means that there's something wrong with the system. Because
what's wrong with the system, Dana? What is wrong with the system? Because in the 213, there ain't no complaining. And it ain't no, like, I don't know what's wrong. In the 213, it's about the information age. In this information age, you know everything. Because there's nothing hidden. You can find anything on Google. YouTube, Yahoo, eBay. There's nothing lost but time. So, if you want to know what's wrong with the system, you can find out what's wrong with the system. Now, it's the fact that if you want to look in the mirror, like Mike said, and say, okay, it's me. I'm fucking up. Let me get myself in order. Because how can the whole move when I'm part of the fucked up system? And I'm causing the fucked up, like you said earlier, Dana, with the mental chains of slavery that we have on our mind. So I'm fucked up. I can't see the black face over the R because I was told Republicans going to cut welfare off. I was told Republicans going to outlaw gay marriage. I was told Republicans going to make abortions illegal. I make the Defense of Marriage Act law. I mean, they're going to just hold all these Christian values too tough, and we as a black people got to roll the Democrat because they're for the poor, the downtrodden, they're for everybody, the women, the Hispanics, the transgender. We got to get in over there because if they take them, they're going to take me.
I know it's bull.
And that's the problem right there, Dana. In every state, we have black Republicans running. But blacks in that state won't fuck with them. They'll go with something against them or against their own needs.
How possible is it that they're not voting for someone because they disagree with what they stand for?
Dana. So basically, that's what I'm saying. More African Americans got more in common with white Democrats than do black Republicans. That's just it. You see?
And that's okay because we're
Dana.
We're American citizens.
Dana. All that's happened was that the Democratic Party got their niggas back because the Republicans came down there and freed the slave. And in the end, the party who fought for freedom, freed the slaves, passed the right to vote, passed all the acts that gave blacks the rights they got right now.
So why is
in the end, we just going to erase all of that because in our mind we've always been Democrats, and we've only been Democrats for 40 plus years. That's all. And in our history here in America, But listen, Dana, Dana, in our history here in America, only one party, there's only been one party that has enacted laws and put laws in place for African Americans. That's the Republican Party.
Why would you say it's something derogatory just because
that's
of the
truth,
way somebody chose to vote? That doesn't make sense.
History, though, Dana. You can have your opinion.
But people choose to vote.
Dana, you can have your opinion. People choose to stay on the plantation. It was their choice, too. There was blacks that fought for the Confederate Army against the Union Army. Dana, there was blacks fighting for the slave master to be enslaved because they had their right. They had their right. They had their right. Dana, more blacks died for the Confederate Army. Dana, listen. More blacks died fighting for the Confederate Army than they did for the Union Army. Point I'm trying to say, there was a whole lot of blacks fighting to stay slaves in this country that don't get talked about. See, all blacks didn't fight for freedom at that time. No. You see, so it's easy to forget history that easily, that simple. Period. Now, when Jimmy Carter came into office, a lot of blacks flipped the Democrat that time because he had a close relationship to the King family. He even appointed Andrew Young as an ambassador to the United Nations. Everybody thought he was going to make Martin Luther King birthday a holiday, but he didn't. But that's neither here nor there. I can point to high-ranking black Republicans that voted for Jimmy Carter, i.e. Colin Powell, i.e. Condi Rice. They're on record for saying it.
But see, I thought that Jimmy Carter, I thought he was President Carter was a good president.
Point being, even Republicans thought that way, too. So what happens? After Carter, you get Reagan. And everybody black hated Reagan. Then you got Bush. Everybody black who hated Reagan hated George Bush. And then we got Bill Clinton. Everybody black loved Bill Clinton. Even though more blacks went to jail under Bill Clinton. He signed the Welfare Reform Act, which cut blacks off welfare. He put three strikes you out, cut Pell Grants, and all of that, but all blacks love Bill Clinton. And then we got George Bush, where black millionaires is mad. So many black millionaires, so many blacks got paid in the housing industry. It was a shame. Now we got Barack Obama. And everybody loves Barack Obama. The point I'm saying is that if we trace our history and go back and look at our history, they were not deemed to make the mistakes of the past. If we embrace our history, then the mistakes of the past won't happen again. So if I can say the conditions that welfare have on blacks today was the same similar conditions that we're back on the plantation.
That's bull, Jimmy.
And say,
that's bull.
Dana. Okay, Dana. Let's do a comparison. Let's do a comparison, okay? For welfare and slavery, all right? Let me tell you, disagree. Show me what I'm wrong at, okay? Dana, we're gonna make a comparison. Dana. Dana.
Statement is wrong.
Dana. You just being disagreeable to be disagreeable, Dana. Dana, you've been disagreeable to be disagreeable. That's all.
No, it's true.
Okay, Dana.
No, I'm telling you how I feel.
Okay,
you can't
Dana.
Make a general statement and then associate it with a group and then think that it makes it right just
can I put
because
my facts
of the
out there?
Association. It's not right.
Can I put my facts out there you can judge that if I can make that statement or not. Because you cannot make a broad statement that I can't make a statement without even hearing my facts. Can you? Just let me know, can you?
No, can you?
Okay. If on the plantation the woman was not allowed to have her man in the household, all he was allowed to do was reproduce. Because to that man, to that plantation owner, the children were money. Now, in welfare, a lady at that time before Bill Clinton signed the Welfare Act, a lady can get on welfare and her children were money as long as the father was not present. Just like on the plantation. Okay. Now, the plantation owner sole responsibility is to house that woman and that kids. Welfare, I'm going to give you Section 8. I'm housing your children and you for free. As long as you ain't your man ain't there. I'm going to give you a medical card to make sure that your children are taken care of. On a plantation, I got Doc coming here to make sure all these kids are well taken care of because they're money to me, as long as the man is not there. Now, I got these kids are not going to do nothing or go nowhere because their income is based on what I give them. They have no house if I say they have no house. I pay their rent. They have no food if I don't give them no food. I give them food. They depend on massa. If the government start giving them the welfare check, they're not going to eat. They're not going to be housed. They got babies by different daddies. They have babies by different daddies, just like the masters had on the plantation. The mother had babies by different daddy because it didn't make no difference. The children were money and future workers for the master. The same situation and symptom that was implied then is used in the welfare system. Now, if you can say that's fake and baloney and disagree, Dana, then I can understand the world you're living in is 1757.
No, what I'm saying to you is that first of all, that's just like trying to associate any other program.
Dana, how is that wrong? Dana, how am I wrong? Just tell me I'm wrong.
You are wrong because first of all, as a woman, I just don't believe that women go out and just get
money.
Okay,
then you don't believe. Dana,
extra money that's coming in the welfare system.
You going on what you believe.
For what?
Dana, not belief, facts. I lay facts on the table. Now dispute my facts.
So
I ain't going on a belief system. Look at the rules for getting on welfare. Study them. And then look
but
at the laws that were implemented for slavery. Dana, this is no belief system.
No
not an opinion, Dana.
This
is not an opinion, Dana.
To help people because
if it makes you feel better, Dana. Dana,
Dana,
I'm gonna let the show end with you feeling happy, and have all my listeners know that this is how I'm gonna end the show, making Dana feel happy, because she's saying the welfare system ain't like slavery, because she believes it. So I'm gonna leave it alone. I'm not going to hurt your belief system. That's like you
well,
say it
just,
Santa Claus.
Or
don't Easter Bunny.
Dana.
I'm not going to tell you there's no Santa Claus. Or no Easter Bunnies. I'm not going to slice a Snicker in half and see the nuts. I'm going to let it ride. I'm just letting it ride. Because there's not one black scholar on the face of this planet that would agree with you. Point blank. Period. You can go to the house right now. Ask your garbage man. He agreed with me.
You can go
ask Harry the Hype that lives in a cardboard box somewhere downtown in D.C. I bet you agree with me. Every black American know that when the welfare system came into play in the African-American community, it was i.e. putting the blacks on plantation. We just got accustomed to it and like it and don't want to let it go.
I disagree. And
so we ain't got
accustomed
to it. Well, then, hey, you can disagree with it.
In fact, African Americans are not even the largest population that are using welfare. That's why I'm telling you. You cannot make
Dana.
A general statement like
hey,
that.
Dana.
And then especially when
Dana, you talking about everybody. I'm talking about black folk. Don't lump us in everybody,
well,
Dana.
Dana, listen. Because it's the same system we're talking about.
Oh, I got you.
And so you can't
Dana,
say.
I got you, Dana. Dana, yeah, you can. Yeah, you can, Dana. Well, Dana, that's like saying this, that a black guy getting arrested over a white guy ain't racial prejudice. It's just the law. And the police say, oh, put it like this. Trayvon Martin. Let's go Trayvon Martin. The Trayvon Martin case ain't racist, Dana, because the system works. No, Dana, you cannot. Dana, you cannot get mad for people taking advantage of the system that is put in place to help. So when the shooter of the Trayvon Martin man walked out, no one should be upset because he took advantage of the system that was in place. And ain't no racism involved. Period. Live in your world.
You can't.
If I can't generalize that welfare and slavery are the same, then nobody can say that a white man can get off shooting a black man because the system is fucked up. Because the system is designed for the people to take advantage of it, like you said. And justice is blind.
Apples and oranges. First of all, when you just
It's not apples and oranges. If the welfare system was set up, Dana,
in African American males when they're going to jail 9 to 1.
There's a disparity of African American women having babies on welfare too, Dana. There's a disparity number that.
No, because African American women are not the most.
Dana. We're dealing systems. And if you say everybody have a right to take advantage of the systems that are in place, so do the individuals that get off on cases that we disagree, i.e. OJ. I mean, we have to let the system ride, Dana, because justice is blind. And there is no racism in the system. We can't have it both ways, Dana, point blank. If you cannot see slavery and the welfare system, then you cannot see racism in the judicial system because the system is set up for everybody to take advantage of it. Ask
OJ.
But
what I'm saying is when you talk about a system that has no disparity, when you talk about a system that has no problems, when you talk about a system that is proven to be unequal. Then there's no comparison.
Top of the time.
You're taking a system that has a majority, and a minority, and you're trying to make it the majority, and then you're taking a system that has
a majority. I'm talking about a system that systematically destroyed a generation of African Americans. It's called the welfare system. Some people say the prison system destroyed African American. But check it out. You know what those words have in common, Dana? System. System.
There's all
the welfare system destroyed
well,
African American's family, and the prison system has destroyed the male reproductive gene pool. So the African American family still is scrambled and not together, just like it was 149 years ago. You see, and like I said earlier, we was better off in 1870.
I disagree.
Than we are. I know, Dana. Hey, Dana, how about this? Hey, Dana.
Yes?
Tomorrow the sun will come out. You agree?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, long as you disagree on everything I said. That's all I want to say. I was going to make sure. All right. All right, I got 49 seconds, Dana. Let me go ahead and end this show. Hey, I like the magic that you sent me for Christmas, though. I appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I actually
can't. All right, everybody. I'll see you tomorrow. Like I say every night. Good night. And may you God be. Anything you want to say, Dana?
Good night, everyone. I'm going to keep praying for us. I'm done.